Welcome to Season 2 of Assessment in Focus, the podcast from Inspira, where we invite our guests to share their insights on assessment transformation, innovation, and enhancement. My guest on this episode is Julian Rawl, who is the Director of MBA Programs at the University of Edinburgh. Julian's an experienced entrepreneur, board member, and postgraduate, undergraduate, and executive education tutor. He's taught extensively in the areas of marketing and strategy at UK and international business schools. Julian has a long and illustrious career across industry and has been the Director of MBA Programs at the University of Edinburgh since 2016. He is a board executive director. He has plenty of experience in the sector, both in industry and in education. And I'm delighted that Julian and I actually first met about a month ago at the Association of MBAs conference in Madrid, where he was on a panel that I chaired, and he's very graciously accepted an invitation to this podcast. So, Julian, firstly, thank you very much for being on the podcast.
It's a pleasure.
Julian, I have some questions for you about current teaching practice and assessment and where we're potentially going in terms of the way in which students interact with their learning and produce artifacts, go out into the wider world. So I'm going to go straight into my first question, which involves the hot topic of education and likely the world at the moment. As our teaching environment changes due to AI, are we afraid of losing our traditions? Are there parts of our academic legacy that are worth fighting for? And are there ones that we should let go?
Yeah, I think AI is everywhere. I can hardly do an hour at the University of Edinburgh without somebody talking about it and so on. It's worth just as by way of a very, very, very short introduction. I'm a baby boomer and I make no apologies for that. But I'm very involved with AI in terms of my teaching and in terms of what I do with my faculty and so on. But I think what it allows me to do is to see the benefits, see the disadvantages, and take a sort of balanced approach. But I'm absolutely in it, and I use it. So I think I can speak fairly reasonably on it. And I think going back to this whole thing about traditions, and I think that if we speak to a lot of people, and we'll have seen it at the conference as well, that you know, everybody is talking about AI and the fact that you have to adapt everything to it. And if you don't, actually, your institution's going to be a little bit of a dinosaur and it's going to fall behind. And there are some fantastic business schools who are absolutely pivoting around AI and they're doing a huge amount of investment in it. And that's absolutely fine. But I think we need to be a little bit careful here. And where I mean careful is that we've seen this over decades. Something big happens and everything changes. And then it's not quite as amazing as it was supposed to be. And then people say, why don't we just look at what we used to be? So therefore, the first thing is, I think we need to be proud as business schools and as universities. We need to be proud of our traditions. And our traditions are getting the opportunity to teach and to reflect, getting the opportunity without necessarily, when our students are on an MBA program, they're in what we call a safe space. Mm-hmm. And they can come into the classroom without thinking that everything they do has got to be translated into a report or a recommendation, which is happening tomorrow. So they get the opportunity to start discussing, playing around with things and so on. And that's where business schools actually have that great opportunity. The tradition of real education. When students join an MBA program, I often say to them, when was the last time you had an opportunity to spend an hour reflecting on anything? And they say, we don't even know what reflection means. We don't have that sort of time. So we have to, in a sense, stand up and say, look, this is what we do. Let me give you an example. Last week, I run a one-week course on marketing communications on branding. It's an MBA elective course. And we use a lot of AI through it. I'm training the students to use AI. But at the end of each exercise when they're doing AI work, we then stand back and reflect. And quite often I say, I want you to do this exercise manually. And then I give another instruction. I want to give you to do exactly the same exercise using AI or vice versa. And what we then start to see is, where are the benefits of using it? But perhaps, where are the disadvantages? And a lot of my students last week said to me, the problem is we could get the answer within 30 seconds using chat or whatever, but we don't own it. What's happening? We're the recipients of that. How do we work that out? How do we have that discussion? Because as part of the practice of teaching, we're introducing reflection. That's where I think business schools, universities have got to stand up and say, look, we do some great things here. We've got great traditions. But of course, we are adapting to the world that is changing. Because if we don't stand up for what we really count for, then there's nothing to stop us simply being replaced by technology, agents, and bots, and everything else. Because where's our unique selling point?
Julian, in considering where that blend needs to be, I know that there are a number of educators who agree with the premise of what you're saying, 100%, but aren't entirely sure where that line should be, how it's not a case of where should I put the AI and where shouldn't I. What are the questions that I should be asking myself in order to determine that I'm making a good decision here as to my AI usage? Is there anything you can help with in that space?
Yeah, I mean, when I decided, and I was at, I think, an Amber conference or something 3 years ago, and we just heard of this thing. It had just been published in Harvard Business Review or whatever, and nobody really knew what it was. And I went back. I knew I had a course to run 2 weeks later, and I thought, I'm going to do something with AI. I have absolutely no idea what I'm going to do. I'm not even sure what it is, particularly. I mean, I understood artificial intelligence, but I just played around, and I thought, well, if I did this and if I did that, I even asked AI to create a rhyming song about me as a teacher. Just have a bit of fun. And I think what is really important is I don't think there is a strict measurement that faculty members need to adopt. What you need to do is just get on with it and play around. Look, everybody who teaches at a business school is an intelligent person. Okay. These aren't people that need a huge amount of educating. They're intelligent enough to do what I did, which is say, I have no idea really what this is all about, but I'll teach myself. And I think one of the problems that faculty have in many universities is we're all waiting for our home parent universities to come up with a policy, preferably a 500-page policy, which has taken 6 months to produce, which is out of date, and to be honest, which is of no use at all. It's much better just to get on with it, and then you'll find what works, and you'll find what doesn't work. And surely, in the spirit of business and entrepreneurship, it's all about learning from things that don't go quite right, rather than expecting your home university to say, here's a 20-point menu. Follow everything on here and it'll be perfect, because we know it won't be. So I think people should not stress. I think people should just get on with it and then work it out for themselves. It's much more fun. And actually, it's much more authentic for the students.
I couldn't agree more. And I think for the educators watching, listening this, who do have the space to do that, who aren't in a school where that's restricted, yeah, I completely agree with you. That's what they need to be doing. And look around for the other Julians is what I would say. The ones who've already had a go are good people to be speaking to get some experience of what's worked and what has not. The concern, a lot of the concern about AI, a lot of the talk about AI relates to assessment. And there's much discussion about AI-driven assessment changes, whether that is change to assessment because of AI or change because of AI or worries about how people would use AI. In that space, where do you think we should be going? What is it that we should be adapting, if anything, in the face of generative AI?
I mean, this is a really interesting one, because I know, as someone who, you know, who does a reasonable amount of marking, unfortunately, around the world, I know the problems of seeing assignments submitted. and they're submitted in this sort of, I don't even think it's mid-Atlantic language. It's just this weird ChatGPT language. In my time, I've been a professional writer. I could never write with the fluency of what some of the students write with, and yet they could be from Armenia or Bulgaria or wherever. And so I think I understand why faculty are very worried about this, because they're basically saying, look, how can we police this? But we know it's not being done properly. But one of the problems we're facing is a lot of faculty are saying the only solution is to go back to closed book examinations in big exam halls. And it's a bit counterintuitive in a sense, because we're talking about the world's fourth industrial revolution. Yet we're saying, let's go back to the 1960s and the world of assessment. And I don't think you can go back in that sort of way. Apart from anything else, the cost and the logistics, sending everybody to do hours and hours in big exam halls, are just prohibitive. But apart from that also, it's almost saying we've been defeated by AI. And I think what we need to do is just take a little more of a creative look at it. So, for example, role-playing, consulting projects, personal reflective assignments, video logs, blogs, all these sorts of things can be done. I've got students on a number of courses who are writing written assignments, but they're designed in such a way that you can't simply chuck what you want into some AI mincing machine and get your answer immediately back. So I think what we need to do is be creative about it and, dare I say, create what might be quite interesting but more reflective forms of assignment. Now, I'm not belittling the fact that this takes time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of faculty members are extremely busy. They've got admin, management, teaching and research to do, and everybody is on their backs saying, when are you going to do this? When are you going to do that? Why are you not spending enough time here? To then completely re-engineer their assignments will take them some time to do. However, I don't think we necessarily have got an option. We can't simply say, we'll just accept this weird language stuff that comes to us. Equally, we can't take the easy option and set up a closed book exam sort of menu, because I don't think it's really an option. So, but again, do something. If it doesn't quite work out, no doubt you'll hear about it. Or come up with your idea for a different form of assessment. Go and talk to somebody. Go and talk to a colleague about it. Have a coffee and just say, what do you think? Because I think that in this fast-moving world we're in at the moment, everything's changing on an almost monthly basis. So you've just got to do something and see whether it works. But I personally am pretty happy with some of the different forms of assessment I'm now seeing. There's a bit of creativity there. It's not as easy, but it can be done, and it can be done effectively.
Indeed. And I'm off to a conference next week where there is always a large number of different types of assessments that are away from the norm that are showcased. And I think my regret is that you often speak to people who will say, but I'm the only one doing it, because my 80 equivalent of no one was ever criticized for buying IBM is that no one's ever criticized for another closed book exam. We all know how to do it. If you go to an exams office and say, can I do one of those? They'll say yes. If you say, can I do something a bit creative, there's a mild bit of panic, rightly so, because they too have got work to do, and this is one way of doing it. In the space of trying out things that are new, what do you believe that universities, as an overall institution, need to be doing in order to enable you and colleagues to try new things out?
Yeah, so my experience of universities, especially UK universities, is that they can be rather slow. They often insist on changes of assessment being done 12 months, 15 months in advance. And I understand why, because they have to publish these things on their websites and they're worried about students saying, I thought I was going to get this assessment and not that one. Mm-hmm. Personally, I think we need to be putting on the websites that some of this information is subject to change.
because then we can free ourselves a bit. And really what universities need to start saying is, look, we understand we need to approve a change of assessment, but maybe we could cut it down to 3 months or four mm-hmm. in advance rather than 18 months or something like this, because it's just simply not feasible. You change a piece of assessment, should we say, because of AI, you get it approved 18 months before you're going to do it. By the time you do it in 18 months' time, AI has worked its way around this anyway. So it's much better to short track. So a plea I would make to universities is, understand why, because of quality and quality assurance, you want to be in a situation whereby you can absolutely feel you've dotted the I's, you've crossed the T's, and you've looked at the providence of the assessment. However, there has to be a bit of realism today. And realism means you can't do all this stuff. So let's try and shortcut it, and let's try and put some riders on our websites and just see how it goes.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think that the old style of tightly defining the assessment worked when there were fewer vehicles for assessment. As it gets broader, you can't do that. I would like to see universities move towards saying, here are our approved assessment vehicles. You will get one of these. And they're not narrowly defined to the exact number of words and the exact amount of time. Yeah. I question out loud, and maybe one day this will be a question I'll ask others, which is, what are we signaling if we're saying to people, effectively choose your program and maybe options based on the assessment style? But I say that hypocritically as someone who took their two options on the bar exams based on how the assessment was done. But for another day, maybe. I want to ask you about something that is off the beaten track of assessment for a moment, but I think really interesting for higher educational professionals as well, which is that how are we evolving our evaluation of things like leadership skills? And I certainly don't want to call them soft skills or other skills. They're crucially important. How are we evolving the evaluation of them in a way that remains consistent with having to have large-scale core programs that people do?
So in terms of the evaluation, are you talking about how we evaluate what's being assessed or how you evaluate the assessment? I was a little confused on that.
Evaluate the former. How do we evaluate what's being assessed?
Well, I think how do you evaluate what's being assessed? I think the principles remain the same as they've ever been, really, because you're being taught something on a course. Therefore, you are then starting to look at what are you being evaluated on in terms of what you've learnt on the course. So when we start to think about it, I think really what we're trying to say here is, okay, here are a series of objectives from a particular course or a particular program. We've got to make sure in our teaching that we're meeting those objectives. But then I think what we've then got to start looking at is evaluating, and I think this is important as we go forward, evaluating in terms of an understanding of the core principles of that course. But in terms of business schools, especially, evaluating how we can look at the application of those principles that we've learned. Now, obviously, this is not going to be across the board for every type of discipline. If you're studying history, or you're studying English literature, you're not really going to be able to apply that. We're going to be evaluating you on what you've learned and what you know. But if you're in a real world type of situation like I'm in at a business school, what I think is hugely important is that we start to join these two things together. This is vitally important now, ever more important, because I'm sorry, but we're going back to the world of AI again. Because the fact of the matter is, we're now in a situation where lower level jobs are being taken by automation, which means that people who are going through, shall we say, master's business programs, post-experience business programs, and so on, have got to be able to demonstrate they don't just know the stuff, but they know how to apply that stuff, and they know how that application actually works or does not work. that's when you start to separate the human being from the machine. And so I think evaluation now really has to have that practical application aligned into it.
And the one of the reasons for asking this is that as we see people evolve the way in which they want to assess and think about potentially oral assessment or assessing in a way that is not the traditional go and write X thousands of words, there is, to my mind, a synergy with the way that we have evaluated and assessed leadership skills or other skills that wouldn't be normally done so in a written way. And I think the reason for my question is, and you so beautifully answered it, is to show people that there is no difference there. We still evaluate in the same way. The method or vehicle may differ, but there isn't, the jump is in the change in vehicle, not in any of our principles.
I think that's correct. I mean, I think we might be sort of talking about leadership and so on. And I think leadership skills is in some ways there are differences that we need to think about in terms of leadership skills and evaluating leadership skills. And perhaps we can come on to that. But I think again, it's this whole thing that if we run scared of who we are, we'll be replaced by who we're not. So we've actually got to be sort of fairly focused, stand up for our principles, but adapt those principles.
I want to ask you about another area that is hyper-relevant to business schools. But there is that cross-applicability as we see it, you know, in the wider world of higher education. But the business school example is a good one. How do you think that we persuade, in this context, corporates to engage with business schools rather than taking off-the-shelf AI courses? And I think for our global listener base, this is true of whatever discipline we're thinking of. The value of an institution, what it produces versus just getting AI to do this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm director of MBA programs at the University of Edinburgh. And once I was director of executive education at the University of Bradford. So I've sort of straddled both of these. And of course, I come from outside the academia anyway. So I understand sort of how these things link. And it's very easy now for corporates and human resource departments at corporates to say, look, we're being squeezed on budgets. We're being squeezed with what we do. Let's see whether we can tick some boxes. And we can tick some boxes. We can put some people through a number of, so we say, AI-generated courses. They do them all online. They're relatively quick. Instead of coming to a business school for 4 days, you can just go online for, you know, for 6 hours or something like that. You tick something at the end, you do some answers, and we've ticked the boxes. And so that's what you're seeing a lot of the time. And one of the problems that we face in terms of working with corporates is the people who often have the training and development budget are not necessarily the people who need the training and development. So you have different lines. It could be that your lower level senior management need to understand a much greater amount of strategy and strategic finance. It could be that your operations people need to understand lots more about marketing and sales so they can see what's driving the operations business and so on. And this is where we then have the benefit of the business school. Because what we're doing is that we're saying, we're not simply going to put you through something as quickly as possible. We're going to bring you together. Sometimes we'll do hybrid, a mixture of online and offline. But what we're going to do is we're going to work with you so that we can unpack and explore the issues that are most important so that at the end of the day, you're going to remember something. Certainly, in the past, I've done a lot of corporate MBAs and corporate postgraduate certificates. And the real benefit there was, once we persuaded the client to pay for these and to allocate the time, was the real difference it made to those people. I can, for one of our big supermarket chains in the UK, running postgraduate certificate programs, which was the first third of an MBA. And these were open to high potential people, some of whom had never even taken A-levels. They just joined the supermarket filling shelves. But these were bright people. And I can remember once they were all in front of a class being taught economics. And on day one, they looked like the world had ended. They were so frightened. And on day five, they were at least 1 foot taller than when they came in. They'd understood it. They'd had the time to say, this is really difficult. We had a fantastic teacher. And they suddenly saw how they could apply the principles of economics to the pricing and demand in their supermarket. But if I'd put them through a 6-hour training course online, they would simply turned off, done the box ticking they needed to, and have thought, thank goodness that's over. What happened was, at the end of this week, they said, thank you so much. I've achieved something I never believed I could, and I can now apply this on Monday back into my role in the supermarket chain. That's where business schools can stand out.
That is a wonderful answer to the value of education, and I'm really glad to have heard it. I'm glad that the audience have too. Julian, thank you very much for the discussion today and for joining us. There's real value in these podcasts, in people hearing about other people's experiences and ideas. I know that you've left the audience with a lot of things to think about and go away and do, which is my favorite way of a podcast taking place. So thank you again. I want to thank our listeners for listening. If you found this useful, please like, subscribe, and share via your preferred podcast platform. If you have time to leave a review, please do. It's always appreciated. And that's it for today. So Assessment in Focus is brought to you by Inspira, providing flexible assessment with integrity. I've been Ishan Kolhatkar, and I will see you next time.